Gotcha. Okay, I just want to talk about a few, something that's really interested me for a number of years. Again, I did have a nice serif typeface there, but we've reverted to Mr. sort of Microsoft's idea of a nice typeface, which is sans serif. Is the role of birds and fire in the Australian landscape? If you've ever spent time in northern Australia, you'll know that the country burns off a lot. And this is a map of fire scars in the northeast of the Northern Territory where I work. This is over 3 years. It's not very accurate. There's a purple, there's a mauve and a darker mauve there, but they give you an idea. Basically, all of this country burns over at least a three-year cycle. There have been some changes, particularly over in the west country over here, west and central Arnhem Land, where there are indigenous ranger groups who are doing a lot of controlled burning. And this is a story that is the impact of indigenous ranger groups is becoming increasingly important right across the Northern Territory and across the top end to a lesser degree. These are satellite picture scars, and it's one of a number of tools that Indigenous fire managers and government fire managers are using. Similarly to what we heard before, government and government agencies, whether local Northern Territory government or federal governments, are basically retreating from a lot of land management, so you end up with Indigenous peoples filling the gaps. They bring greater knowledge, local knowledge and historical knowledge of how fire works in the landscape, but they don't have as much money. But a lot of the time, governments of all persuasions and jurisdictions are increasingly putting greater onus. And on one hand, that's sort of, well, here you are, we're giving you responsibility for doing this, but really what we're doing is backing out, and you're the cheap way of doing this job. There's, you know, all sorts of risks that involve in that. But people get jobs and they get to work on their country. So, but I want to talk about something else, which is related to fire, and a lot of us who live in the territory, if you spend any time there, you'll know that this country burns a lot, and when you go to a fire ground, what you will see a lot of the time are these birds. This is Milvus migrans, black kite. It's a common bird right through Southeast Asia, through India. I've seen the same species with a different name or a different subspecies in Nairobi, where you can see thousands of them coming back into the city at night. Not a particularly attractive bird, but very agile flyer and very common, particularly in the top end. A sort of seasonal migrant into the top end. So at home now, where I live in Darwin, there are a lot of these birds around. Sometimes you get kettles of several hundred of these birds sort of pluming up into the sky following thermals. So a bit of a look at fire in the Australian landscape from an early explorer, Sir Thomas Mitchell, and then a more recent one, and this is Musso Harvey, who is a very important man. Again, he's a Yanyuwa person. He's talking about the role of fire in his country in the Gulf of Carpentaria, about 1,000 kilometres southeast of Darwin. Some of the relationships between birds and fire in Australian mythical and physical landscapes. Fire is a very common element in Australian mythology and legends. Morphological characteristics like black feathers of crows and ravens, flame robins, fairly obvious, red tails of fire tail finches. There are all sorts of links right across the country to these fairly obvious morphological characteristics. I've been intrigued for a number of years about reports of the involvement of raptors, a number of different species, black kite, Milvus migrans, but also Falco berejora, the brown falcon, which is a very long-legged falcon that you often see around fires, about whether they're active promoters of fires, whether they actually spread fire. Now, this is pretty controversial in any context, because it's something that really hasn't been, I don't think, examined before. Usually we think of fires as being anthropogenic or produced by things like lightning or other sources. Fire is generally seen as a good thing for a lot of Australian peoples. It's a tool rather than something to be feared for Australian Aboriginal people. For a lot of Europeans, anyone familiar with the work of Stephen Pine on Australia would know that fire is something that is fought, very much like it is in this country. It's something you know, it's like the war against drugs, it's the war against fire. And like the war against drugs, it's largely been a losing, perhaps, Pyrrhic effort. Fires are great because they flush out a lot of things, they clear country, and it's a sort of mobile barbecue for birds and a lot of predators. Here is the first report that I found from this fellow, Jarolin, who I don't know. Philip Roberts, who comes from country that I work. And this is a report from 1964 in a book called Are the Aboriginal that was written by Australian journalist Douglas Lockwood, recording Philip Roberts' thing. And this is something that if you enter a search into birds and fire, it'll often come up with this. I've seen a hawk pick up a smouldering stick in his claws and drop it in a fresh patch of dry grass half a mile away. Da-da-da-da-da. Then you have, and I'm at this stage, I'm really early in this sort of research. I've got a lot of different reports, and I think to a certain degree that this has entered into a mythology of its own, in that it's out there, it's been in the literature for 50-odd years, and somehow it seeped into people. People have this idea that, yes, I read it, it came from Douglas Lockwood's book, it came from Philip Roberts, it's been around, and it's like, it might be an urban myth. It's impossible for me to understand, you know, or appreciate quite how much of what I'm hearing is based on these reports and how it's filtered down like Chinese whispers over the years or not. But I tend to think not, because there are a variety of sources, some of which are contemporary and anecdotal, some of which are based on so-and-so told me. Then there's this reference from an ethnobiologist, a book prepared by ethnobiologist Glenn Whiteman. He's done a lot of work with Aboriginal groups across the Northern Territory, that talks about kerk, and kerk is both onomatopoeic for the call, but it also has some associations with fire, and that's from language groups just outside of Darwin, a couple of hundred miles. They talk about the creation role, kerk stole fire sticks from the dingo so that he could cook the cheeky yam. So there's this raw and the cooked association, also association between species. A couple of other instances there, references. One from a linguist, another one from a European bird watcher who has direct observation there. These are more recent. I put out a media release to media across Australia recently, and the Tennant Creek Times, which is 1,000 kilometres south of Darwin, ran this last week. And this is from a local response from a firefighter. He's definitely seen it, particularly in the top end. seen kites in particular swoop down and pick up burning material and drop it ahead of the fire front. This starts new fires, which pushes critters out of the burning bush. These are quickly collected by the wading birds for food. And often, at a big grass fire, you will see hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of kites around there, and they will go right into the fire front. But also, there's a lot of birds that will be picking up the barbecued carcasses after the fire has passed. So there's a couple, you know, you can get hot food or chilled. Bob Baker, someone asked me what a bushy was yesterday. That's what a bushy is, an old bushy. Spent most of his life in stock camps, that's cattle camps. He's witnessed this, seen it with my own eyes. I can tell you without any fear of contradiction. So there's this sort of idea of, you know, a moving feast again. Watching hawks start fire to chase out prey is definitely one of the things which grab your attention. Now, here's the contra view. Now, Johnny Esberg is a very respected ornithologist and biologist in the top end. He's worked there for 30 or 40 years. He says this is all rubbish. The views I've held are similar to my belief now. I've not seen any evidence, nor has anyone convinced me, that kites carry burning sticks or leaves for more than 50 to 80 metres, and when they do, it's usually because there's a lizard or a grasshopper or a bush cockroach that was on the material they picked up. Think about it. A kite flying with a bit of leaf or brush that was alight or smouldering would soon begin burning quite savagely. Why? When the air flying, it would be like having a bellows working on the smouldering material. Would soon flare up and probably singe the kite. I do not believe a kite would be able to carry burning material over distances. I've heard people say they do. Having spent a lot of hours over the past 40 years in the top end studying fire ecology, I would have come across this if it were a common practice for hawks, kites, whatever, to start fires in this manner. So there are two opposing views. My colleague Mark Bonter, who's done... fascinated with fire. He was at Delta State University in Cleveland in the Central Delta, Mississippi. He's now up at Pennsylvania State. He raised this last year and we've had lots of discussions about this. And this idea of whether, you know, how dramatic it would be if we can show that birds have actually propagated fire, if they do this, because of this traditional association. We think it's anthropogenic and the role that the fires make in landscape modification. So fires caused by lightning strikes would have been far less important in landscape modification over large parts of the world. What if animals other than humans exhibit pyrophilic, and I think that's a great word that's going to stick in my head, for ethno-ornithologists, the rather paternalistic, it isn't true unless and until Western scientists confirm it, is a real can of worms. But in the case of an avian behaviour pattern this significant, multiple independent confirmations would definitely help. The purported use of fire as a tool for landscape modification has been commented upon by Western naturalists and even accepted within the secondary literature, but it remains unclear whether such behaviour has ever been independently corroborated. Persuasive data was presented that would not fail to have a major effect on the scholarship of those of us who study the pervasive influence of fire on landscape. Okay, that's where I had the video. Here is the text. From the video, the crow first came from the east, from Murrinyibul. She landed at Wurrungulla, Black Rocks. She was there, and that's going to be the site actually of the local ranger group, is at this really quite magical site, and that has historical significance for Yanyuwa people. They're now going to have their ranger base at Black Rock. She was there with her children, they were crying. She said, "Be quiet, be still." Then this stranger, the chicken hawk, and the Wulawanga, he's come from the east. And the chicken hawk brought the fire, the crow had the water. The river flows close by, and the river is salty there, but it's a mix of salt and fresh water. It's about 30 miles upstream from the Gulf. The crow and the chicken hawk began to argue, "Give me some fire, I'm eating my food raw." Chicken hawk used to say back to the crow, "No, no, you give me some water, I'm thirsty." They kept arguing. Chicken hawk called out from the east and the crow calling out from the west. So there's a whole lot of different things here. There's fire, there's water, there's one moiety against another moiety. So there are all these different factors coming together. There's this directional thing, one from the east, from the sea, one from the west, from the land. And this is the western coast of the Gulf. So the east is the Gulf of Carpentaria. They argued and they fought, so there's this notion of division and session. The crow grabbed the fire and she scattered it northwards and southwards. The chicken hawk grabbed the water and spilt it eastwards and westwards. So today we're all eating our food cooked and we're drinking water. So these two fundamentals for life come out of this story. The water is for the Mambalia and Rumbaria people. That's one of the moieties. The fire is for the Wialia and Wadalia people. So that's the other moieties. So there's this interchange between the moieties, but then... And for those of you looking for the reference, it's the Monash Country Lines Archive. If you just Google that, you'd find the link from there. And there's a whole range of other of those movies there, you can see. And finally, this is a painting not very well reproduced. This is from another area when I was talking before about Western Arnhem Land. This is from a group of people who have been doing work in Western Arnhem Land for a long time. There's a wonderful book in which this paper, The Language of Fire, Seasonality, Resources and Landscape Burning on the Arnhem Land Plateau. That's by Murray Gard, G-A-R-D-E. He's a linguist and all sorts of things. Very good fellow. He's worked with these people for a long time. Fluent speaker of the local language, Binninj Godrock. And in a book, Culture, Ecology and Economy of Fire Management in North Australia Savannas, which is about fire management right across the top end, and in particular in this area of Western Arnhem Land. And this is a painting that was used in this book, which was produced in 2009 by Billy Yalawonga from Karakunj. And there's that reference again. Karak, the first part of the word, just is the name for the brown falcon, Falco Berigura. Karak, K-A-R-R, it's the same word that it was used south of Darwin, K-E-R-R. Onomatopoeic to describe the call of the bird. The association between birds and fire is celebrated by the Binninj people of Western Arnhem Land in ritual associated with the hollow log ossuary ceremony known as Lodokon. For a number of nights in succession, sacred songs of the association between the brown falcon, Falco Berigura, and fire are sung. At the conclusion of the public session, men of particular patrimony subsections, Bulanj and Godjok, line up. And in imitation of the brown falcon, they hold a firebrand aloft as they celebrate the bird in song and ritual. And that's just a couple of points. Next, I can be contacted at that email address if you want to. And I'm looking, it's the northern fire season in northern Australia right now, and I'm looking for to spend quite a few productive hours hanging around fires trying to record something, because I really want to nail this down. And I'm also getting a lot of interest from people who are who've got observations. A lot of this is vernacular, but I'm also looking at perhaps some more in-depth research over time. So if anyone has any reports about birds and fire, I'd be interested. Any in particular with, particularly from the subcontinent or savannah countries, give me a call. All right, thank you.